I'm excited to tell you about our upcoming seminar in Dallas, Texas on Saturday, September 13th. This is a great time to take a day away to be refreshed in your homeschooling journey. Get on the same page with your spouse, rub shoulders with like-minded families in your region, and build your family's library with books brought by our friends at Yellow House Story Shop. A literature-based approach to education will be the breath of fresh air you need as you start this school year. Visit our website at homeschoolmadesimple.net/seminars to register and make plans to join us in Texas on September 13th. Every once in a while, we like to provide some fresh inspiration for your reading life. If you don't have a stack of books you're reading through right now, we're here to help. Or if you're like me, you're always willing to make room for a new book, even if the nightstand is already full. You're listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. This is a podcast to help you homeschool simply, inexpensively, and enjoyably. Carol Joy Side has been helping families homeschool for several decades now through her literature-based approach to education. If you're looking to build your family's home library and fill your shelves with the best books, be sure to download our free book list with over 150 books. You can find it at homeschoolmadesimple.net/booklist. In this episode, Carol shares what she's been reading lately and provides some book recommendations for you to add to your own nightstand. Listen in.
Welcome, friends. I am super excited to visit with you today. We haven't done one of these What's on My Nightstand in quite a while, and the books have been stacking up. So Rachel and I thought today was the day. So I have a whole bunch of books, and we'll see how many we get through. So I'll start with what I've just been reading as we speak that won the National Book Critics Circle Award. And it's called The Warmth of Other Suns. The Warmth of Other Suns. And it comes from a line in a poem by the gentleman that wrote Native Son, Richard Wright. And the full context of the poem is, I was leaving the South to fling myself into the unknown. I was taking a part of the South to transplant in alien soil to see if it would grow differently, if it could drink of new and cool rains, bend in strange winds, respond to the warmth of other suns, and perhaps to bloom. So this is the story of the Great Migration, of the African-American community that was being humiliated and beaten down and really tortured and death in what was called the Jim Crow laws in the South. Some of the things that were being designated for people of color would be even separate Bibles when you were being sworn in at the courthouse, separate aisles at the racetrack, at saloons, you couldn't sit at the same bar, different parking spaces, all throughout the South, all these issues that, you know, some of us are more aware of than others. But even at the post office in Pensacola, Florida, there was a white and a black or colored window at the post office. In Oklahoma, there were, quote, colored telephone booths and white. I'm using the terminology that the author uses, who herself is an African American. And she says she's using the language that was pertinent for the time. Even to get license plates, you had to go to separate windows in Mississippi and to separate tellers at the bank in Atlanta. There were separate taxi cabs and for the entire state of Mississippi. And there were curfews. So if you were a person of color, you had to be off the streets by 8 o'clock in Palm Beach and Miami Beach, Florida. It's just unbelievable. Even the rules of the road did not apply if you were a person of color. If a African-American person reached an intersection first, he had to let the white motorist go ahead of him. He could not pass a white motorist on the road, no matter how slowly the white motorist was going, and had to take extreme caution to avoid an accident because he would likely be blamed, no matter who was at fault. A black person could not contradict a white person or speak unless spoken to first. A black person could not be the first to offer to shake a white person's hand. And many people would misstep on these extremely ridiculous rules and horrific rules. Two white people beat a black tenant farmer in Mississippi in 1948 because the man asked for a receipt after paying his water bill. So the people of the South of color were being held captive. So starting in World War I, they began an immigration to the North. Of course, there were jobs. There was hopefully not the persecution that they had experienced in the South. Not that it was the perfect promised land either place, but I think they just felt it couldn't be worse. And most people had a relative who had gone North and had been able to accomplish things, attend different higher level educational schools. For whatever reason, the people down South were hearing of the North as the promised land. And so Isabel Wilkerson writes this book, which has become an absolute bestseller. It won the Pulitzer Prize in 1994. She also worked for the New York Times, and she was the first Black woman to win a Pulitzer and the first African-American to win for individual. So this was in journalism, but also for individual reporting. And she's won the Guggenheim Award, the George Polk Award. She's lectured at Harvard and has been on staff at Princeton and Emory, and she's now working at Boston University as a professor. So during the Great Migration, her parents journeyed from Georgia and Southern Virginia to Washington, D.C., and this was her very first book that she wrote. It is beautifully written and a page-turner, and she uses three different people as kind of her springboard for the story. One is a woman, so you'll see as you read the book, but she keeps bouncing into their lives and telling you the story. And I've just begun it, but I'm so excited about it that I had to tell you about it. I also, in Well-Read Mom, we read a book called My God and My All by probably my best beloved author, or one of my best. And her name is Elizabeth Googe, G-O-U-D-G-E, Elizabeth Googe. They pronounce it Googe in England, but she is a British author that has been dead, I think, since the 60s. But many of her books are on my lists and in my heart. And I have first editions that I've collected. She's very dear to me. And I had tried to read My God and My All a long time ago. And I just wasn't, you know how it is. Sometimes you read a book and it just doesn't grab you. And other times you love it. So this book, as I said, was part of a book club, you know, for Well-Read Mom, and it's the story of the life of St. Francis of Assisi. And having been there not too long ago with my granddaughter in Italy, in Assisi, probably my very, very favorite experience of any travel destination I've been to, it had the most spiritual meaning. And you can feel the Holy Spirit when you come to that small town there in the hills of Italy. So as I read this book, it just made such a difference this time around. And it was life-changing, maybe because I'd been there, maybe because I was more focused. I was reading a book by someone who I trust and respect. Anyway, it really impacted me deeply this time around, and I highly recommend My God and My All about St. Francis by Elizabeth Googe. And then with my grandsons, my three grandsons, when we're together, if they spend the night or if I'm over at their house, I try to always read to them. And we're going through the Little Bridges series, which they absolutely love. And we have now gotten to book 5 in the series, and it's called The Fields of Home. The Fields of Home. And it is, of course, these books are based on the author's childhood, Ralph Moody's childhood. And this is where he is living with his grand. He hated school. He went to school for a while and was just miserable. And so his mother let him leave school, and he goes and lives with his grandfather so he didn't go to jail. Just a joke, but he was going to get in trouble big time. And so he goes and lives with his grandfather, who is absolutely the most hilarious and unique person, and talk about someone running hot and cold. He's very tender and very sweet and very affectionate with Ralphie. And then he just becomes like a crazy man. And then his Uncle Levi is in the book. His Uncle Levi lives in town, but he goes out and helps Grandpa occasionally, and they fight like cats and dogs. And then there's this sweet lady who works for the grandpa as a housekeeper, a young woman. And she is very loyal to the grandpa and loves him and takes wonderful care of him and Ralphie, makes some beautiful meals and just is so dear, such a family member, really. And then at the end, she gets married. And it's just a beautiful, true story that boys love. If you have a reluctant male reader in your family, read the Little Bridges books. The first book has some rough language in it, and I don't know why, but then I don't think the other books do. I could be wrong because we've been reading them for quite a while now, but I know the first book needed some major editing, and that's the beauty of reading out loud because you get to change things. If you come upon something that isn't quite up to your standards, you can just edit it. Excuse me, and the kids don't know the difference. Another book that I have been so excited about is a book by Sigrid Undset. And those of you who use my book lists, the A Lover of Books page under High School and Adult, I have a book on there and have had for years called Kirsten Lavin's Daughter. And it's a very thick, rather challenging book to read. And it's one of my all-time faves. But a lesser known book by her is a book called Ida Elizabeth.
JJ Side here with a quick word from one of our valued partners. This summer, Crossway Publishing has released the 5-volume Dreamkeeper Saga by Catherine Butler, a middle grade fantasy series that's going to invite your kids into conversations about the gospel. And my wife's been reading them out loud to our kids this summer, and one aspect of the books that stood out to us is how the books help make biblical faith tangible and accessible. Your kids are going to learn about the power of prayer and the reality of the unseen realm and have fun along the way. You can pick up a copy of the set wherever books are sold or visit crossway.org/dreamkeeper to learn how to get 30% off of the free Crossway Plus account. I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the math program our kids have been using for several years now called CTC Math. I asked my wife and kids for things they like about CTC Math, and my wife mentioned how there's one price for all your kids, how easy it is to look back at what we've already covered, as well as look ahead to what we're going to cover in the coming year. You get access to the whole curriculum from K through 12 all through the year. You can look at it anytime you want. For a lot of other curriculums, you can't get a look ahead at what's coming next year till you've purchased it. And the kids mentioned how concise and clear the teaching is, how the assignments don't feel too long, how he'll teach the same concepts in multiple ways to make sure you catch it, how encouraging the teacher and founder Pat Murray is, and how he presents the concepts in a way that makes you believe you can grasp them too. I can't recommend it highly enough. You can go to ctcmath.com to learn more.
Ida Elizabeth, and it's more in a contemporary. The other book is set, you know, I think in the Middle Ages, if I'm not mistaken. It's in Norway. And it's a very difficult marriage that this woman gets involved in. It's just really a beautiful story of a woman who hangs in there, does difficult things, the struggles of survival that she is cast into by a man that doesn't provide for her, doesn't care for her, is very irresponsible, very immature, ungodly. And so it's just a challenging window into what it is to be a woman in the more modern day and still maintain our motherhood, our dignity. It's quite a challenging and lovely book. And then another book that we read is Cry, the Beloved Country by Alan Payton. And this is also always been on my book list. And it is one of those books that I read it over and over. This is probably at least the third, if not the fourth time that I've read it. And it reads as a poem. And the beautiful thing about this book is it was a first-time book by Alan. It is set in South Africa during the time of apartheid. And it is about an Anglican priest. And he is married and he's very, very poor. And it's really a prodigal son story. He goes after his son in Johannesburg. He goes to find his son and his sister, who had both really fallen into deep error. And it is, I can't describe it to you, but the first line, if you've ever played a a game where they read the first line of a book and, you know, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, or, you know, different first lines of famous books. I love the first line of this book. There is a lovely road that runs from Isopo into the hills. There is a lovely road that runs from Isopo into the hills. These hills are grass covered and rolling, and they are lovely beyond any singing of it. Ah, anyway, I love to read this book, but what I really enjoy is hearing it read to me, because the way that you know if a book is really well written is how it sounds when you read it out loud. If a book is poorly written, it's like being tortured to listen to it out loud. You know, it's bad enough to skim through it and see if the mother comes back or the guy dies at the end or something. But when you have to plow through it page by page, having it read to you, it will make you want to just scream. So Cry the Beloved Country, if you can get the audio versions, but there may be other translations, but listen to it, a sample of it, before you purchase or subscribe to it. I also highly recommend the movie. The universal rule is you must read the book first in order to watch the movie. But the movie with James Earl Jones is a poem in itself and a life-changing book. And wow, I cannot say enough about this book, Alan Payton, Cry, the Beloved Country. And then I discovered an author named Michael O'Brien, which I may have discussed in a previous podcast. But in talking to friends who love Michael O'Brien, they all said, have you read Island of the World? They all felt that that was his greatest novel. Now, it's not for the faint of heart, because it is over 800 pages, but it goes very quickly. And it's the story of a little child born in 1933 in the Balkans. And he's the son of a school teacher up in the mountains. And so this is, you know, Yugoslavia, and the Germans and the Italians are occupying Yugoslavia. And you've got the fascists and the Serbs and the communists, and everybody's caught in the crossfires of this horrible, unresolved conflict. There's a deep spiritual piece in this. Peter Kreeft said this, you will not want to put this book down until you finish it. And you will continue to live in it even after you close its covers. This story will change you and make you a wiser, better person. Is there any greater success for a book than that? Peter Kreeft. I love him as a writer, and I love Michael O'Brien. He himself is in that he does iconography. I couldn't get that word out. He does iconography. He's a painter. He's a writer. Most people know him for his book, Father Elijah, which I have not read, but he's written many, many books. He's a Canadian and he loves the Lord, and his books are deep. They're mystical. They're very convicting for me. I really like his writing. And then an author that has had a very big influence on my life is an author named Elizabeth Gaskell. And she wrote during the time of the Civil War. She's a British author. And she was called professionally Mrs. Gaskell because women were not really respected in the literary world. And so most women used a pen name, sometimes a man's name, but Elizabeth Gaskell just hid under her, you know, title. So I want to talk to you about three books of hers that I've been reading recently. So I read Cranford, a short, delightful kind of satire book, really, about a little tiny community of women, primarily women, and all their kind of invisible rules and dogmas. And it is an absolutely delightful book. And the BBC did a kind of a rendering of it, but they changed it greatly. It's not, this book is mainly done in the form of, you'll see, you know, short chapters, almost like a letter, reporting kind of the social doings and goings on and whose feelings got hurt and who was invited to what tea or what, you know, card gathering or whatever. But the insight into human nature is profound in Elizabeth Gaskell's books. And I just love Cranford. It's a short, sweet read. It kind of reminds me of I Saw Three Ships by Elizabeth Googe. That same kind of feeling of that little community and the little maiden ladies and all the little stipulations. It's that is also a delightful book. Back to Elizabeth Gaskell. Probably the book that she is best known for is a fairly thick tome, which I really enjoyed, over 600 pages. It's called Wives and Daughters, and it's the story of a young woman who's being raised by her father, who is a physician, and she gets involved with a family in her community. They're kind of the lord and lady of the manor, and she gets involved because the wife is chronically ill, and they don't have a daughter, and so they have two sons who are out of the country or out of the area, and so she spends a great deal of time at this family and hears so much about the sons, and then begins to fall in love with the parents' favorite, honored, cherished son, the firstborn. And of course, in England, the firstborn has all the power and all the estate. And so, but in meeting him, there are some surprises and some really interesting things that she discovers about the secondborn son, who is kind of the child that gets no attention, no honor, but yet she realizes where the gold is buried. And it's a beautifully written book. And I love her dad. There's some satire with her stepmother as her father remarries and all the drama that entails. And I love the gentleman who's the lord of the manor. He's just a rough cob, but he is pure gold and has a heart that is so sweet and so tender, and love Mrs. Gaskell's writing. And then the third book I want to tell you about that I've been reading of hers, because, you know, literary people don't just read books, they read authors. And so when you read a book that you love, the question you should always ask is, what else has this person written? And so after reading Wives and Daughters and Cranford, I decide, and of course, what else have I read? I feel like I've been reading other books by her recently. But anyway, then I decided, because Ruth is always also something I'm reading at a book club. So I decided I would read the other books as well. But Ruth is the story of a very, very beautiful young woman, a teenager, really, whose parents die. And she is given to the care of a man she's never met as her protector, supposedly, but he doesn't do a very good job of it. And he apprentices her as a seamstress. And she's lived a very sheltered life where she was loved and protected and cared for. And she's thrown into some very worldly situations and is seduced, in a sense, by a wealthy, powerful young man. And he acts like he's going to protect her, but instead he involves her in an out-of-wedlock relationship. And then finally he becomes ill. His high-ranking mother comes and sweeps him away and leaves this lovely young lady named Ruth completely defenseless in this world. And some people take an interest in her and pity on her. And then she realizes that she's expecting a child. And it is beautifully written. So Elizabeth Gaskell, the name of the book is simply Ruth. Wow. This was her second novel. It was written in 1853 during the Civil War. And wow, it's lovely. And then I want to close with a book that's a children's book by another author that is very near and dear to my heart. And I reread her books frequently. And my favorite of her books are her children's books. And this is one of them that I just love. And it's called The Didikoi. And it's on my book list in the seminars. And it's spelled D-I-D-D-A-K-O-I, The Didikoi, which is another name for gypsies or travelers in Britain, at least it used to be. And it's a story of a little girl whose grandmother is a traveler, and they live on the land of a very kind lord there in England. And the grandmother dies, and she left in her will that you should burn her caravan, her little wagon that they lived in and traveled in if they had a horse, which they were no longer traveling, but it was just on the land of this lovely admiral who was a lord. So she almost dies and she's being bullied, and it's a very sad beginning, but it's the most redemptive story of what love can accomplish and how the walls can come tumbling down when there is love. And it just will brighten your life. I also love her other book. Oh, I can't think of what it's called. The Dark Horse. I believe that's right. The Dark Horse. And that is another delightful book that involves, you know, children and nuns. And her books are just brilliant. Of course, she lived in India. She was raised in India as an expat. And some of her books will just really touch your heart. Someday, maybe I'll talk to you more about the book China Court, which I love, In This House of Breed, A Candle for St. Jude. Let's see, what else do I really enjoy? An Episode of Sparrows, that's on my book list as well. Green Gage Summer, The Battle of the Villa Fiorita. So she's written many, many books, and some of them can feel a little dark if she's dealing with the culture there in India and Hinduism and the Brahmins and all that. That can feel a little oppressive to me. But her children's books are lovely. She also wrote a children's picture book called The Holly and the Ivy, which is the name of the most famous British Christmas carol, The Holly and the Ivy. And it's about a little girl and a doll, and kind of a little girl that's without family. And again, you know, the theme of adoption, I think, is very big in Rummer Gooden's life. I think she had a very kind of a lot of upheaval in her childhood. She and her sister, they both became writers, and they just had hard lives. And Rummer Gooden's husband abandoned her and her children, and she had to make a way selling stories to support herself and to keep her children from starvation. And so she writes with a lot of compassion for people that are struggling and for lives that are hard. And I think you will not be disappointed as you begin to discover some of these authors. So hope that will give you some goodies to pursue for the summer, maybe, or the fall. You're never alone when you have a book in your pocket. Blessings.
You've been listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or share this episode with a friend. It means so much when you help us spread the message of Homeschool Made Simple with others. Thanks for joining us this week on the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. Remember, Jesus' commandments are not burdensome. What he calls you to do, he will enable you to do. Blessings.